I'm going to take a break from my normal sermon series I've been in and just talk a little bit about why are we afraid, or I think I put up here, fear not. You can tell I did my own graphic. You can tell Josh did not do that one, but fear not. Do you know the best way to swat a fly? Well, there's actually research on this, if you believe it or not. According to the Scientific Journal, the best way is to take two pieces of tissue paper in each hand. For those that little germaphobes, maybe two pieces of tissue paper in each hand. And they say to approach the fly from the right and the left at the same time, keeping your hands equal distance apart, and right at the end, slap it together. And the reason why, according to fly neuroscience Dr. Edward Gray, it's pretty amazing, we got doctors for everything, don't we? Anyhow, he says, a fly cannot cope with this situation since its central nervous system circuitry is geared to avoid approaching movement from only one part of its visual field at a time. So two simultaneously approaching threats render the fly immobile, and the central nervous system shuts down and cannot compute which angle to take off and flee from the threat. So in other words, the fear of focusing on multiple objects freezes or shuts down the fly's most basic effective defense, which is to fly off. And you know, for many of us, sometimes we get to be like that poor fly, do we not? Especially in the midst that we're living in this coronavirus scare, and we think about all these things, and fear comes and it strikes us because we have many fears and we feel overwhelmed. And we begin to focus on the objects and the things around us, and we forget to focus on God. And when we focus on the objects and the things around us, it leaves us like immobilized, not knowing what to do or where to go, and that's when fear strikes our hearts. And the question is, should we live in fear? As Christians, should we be panicked? Should we be in the utter hysteria like the rest of the world? And not just over this coronavirus, but things we face in life as well. And I can tell you, as a Christian, you do not have to live in fear. In fact, as Christians, we should not live in fear. If you didn't believe in God and did not know Jesus Christ, I understand why you live in fear. I don't understand why you buy a lot of toilet paper, but I understand why you can live, why you can live in fear. But you don't have a lot of toilet paper. I'm going to be getting a lot of hand washing going on. Anyway, either way, you're not doing either one of those things, you got more problems than just the coronavirus. But if you, as a Christian, you have a choice. You see, if you don't believe in Jesus, you don't have a choice. But if you believe in Jesus, fear is a choice. And the choice is, are you going to live your life full of fear and let your life be full of worry, doubt, stress, heartache, turmoil? Or are you going to live your life full of faith and fearless? See, faithless is fearful living. If you're faithful, it'd be fearless living. And obviously right now, of course, we're talking about the coronavirus, but like I said, you may have let it get the best of you. Maybe you've watched too much news or spent too much time studying or preparing or trying to figure out this thing. And this virus might have you fearful, and not only that, it's just kind of like one more thing on the list. Because you were already worried because you were down to your last paycheck, or maybe because you lost your job, or maybe because the slowdown in the economy or the stock market, maybe the turmoil in the Middle East or the housing market, or whatever it is. It just seems like everything's coming at you in one direction, and you feel immobilized, and you feel helpless, and you're sitting there struck by fear. And as a Christian, you don't have just a basic understanding or ability to call out on God in prayer and trust in Him. And the choice is yours, though. What good does fear do? Fear is oversized when it comes in our life. Fear takes over our life. Fear destroys peace. Fear destroys families. Fear destroys joy. Fear destroys communities. Fear destroys churches. Nothing good comes out of fear. The question for you is, imagine your life if your life was completely rid of fear. What would your life be like? What would your thoughts be like? What would your heart feel like if you was totally untouched by fear or angst? What if faith, not fear, ruled your life? What if faith, not fear, ruled your heart? If you could hover a fear magnet over your heart and get every shred of fear in your heart out, what would remain? A life or a day absent of failure or rejection or calamity? Could you imagine a life with no fear? Well, hopefully, by the time we work through scriptures and you prepare your heart this morning, when we leave here, we'll be fear. Free from the fear that we have in our heart and our life, no matter what it may be. Whether the virus, whether your job, whether your marriage, whether your kids. I want you to learn with me from Matthew chapter 8, verses 23 and 27. And these couple of verses here, we're going to get a prescription for fear. And I want to just read these scriptures. I want to go back and we're going to talk about them and break them down a little bit and talk about why we can fear not. It says in verse 23, "Now when he got into the boat," this is Jesus, "his disciples followed him. And suddenly, a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves. But he was asleep. Then his disciples came to him and woke him, saying, 'Lord, save us, we are perishing.' But he said to them, 'Why are you fearful, O you of little faith?' Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the seas, and there was a great calm. Then the men marveled, saying, 'Who can this be that even the winds and the sea obey him?'" And what a story. Jesus, he had several people around him. And now Jesus separated himself from the masses like he normally did. Maybe he was social distancing. I don't know. Anyways, that's a joke for the coronavirus. Jesus got into this boat. Says that the disciples followed him. Not that, hey, Jesus getting in the boat, it's okay for anyone to go. No, these were serious followers of Jesus. They followed him. They went with him. They didn't say, go ahead and go your way, we're going to go our way. No, they went with Jesus. And then these men had obviously made a commitment to Christ. It's not like a lightweight or someone on the fringe. These were real followers of Christ. They were not fair-weather followers. They were devoted. And Jesus led them, and they followed. And by the way, that's a true test of discipleship, by the way. It's not so much what you know, it's what you obey. And we all know a lot about Christ, but the question is, how much do we obey? And these men were willing to obey Jesus, even to get on a boat and go somewhere that no one else was, because they were following Jesus. And then comes verse 24, the shocker. It says, suddenly a great tempest arose, and so that the boat was covered with waves. I've preached this, talked about this verse in particular before. The word tempest here is an interesting word. It's a word that Matthew chose that means suddenly a great seismos, or a word that means in our language today something that we still use, like a seismologist would study earthquakes. Or the word means a violent shaking or thundering. The word was only used two other times in the New Testament. Once when Jesus died and the whole mountain shook and scared everyone on the mountain. And the other time was at his resurrection when the graveyard trembled. So this was no small storm. This was a huge seismo storm. A storm that was tempest. A storm that would scare even the most experienced fishermen. And so Matthew, a crew of disciples, felt the seismos, and it shook them to the core. They were running, scared to death. And it says it wasn't just planned, it was all of a sudden. They wasn't expecting it. It was a storm of a lifetime that came immediately and took them by surprise and shook them to the core. And you say, does that seem strange to you? Does it seem right for these two verses to be connected together? They followed Jesus in the boat, and suddenly the biggest storm of their life came along. If I was writing a story, I would hope to come up with a better sentence than that, right? Maybe something that was a little more happier. maybe if it was written in modern day mindset, we might say they got in the cruise ship with Jesus and went on a cruise, and everything was great and grand. Everyone had a great time, and the boat never even rocked, and no one even got sick. Here's an important principle about Christianity. Being a Christian does not exempt you from troubles and trials. I know this is tough. I know we want to believe, and I know you want to not think in these terms, but sometimes you got to be ready for them. Many of us believe that we should be fearless because God would never put us in a fearful situation. It doesn't work that way. As a disciple of Christ, you can expect, just like other people of the world, just like me, just like Christians, just like good Christians and bad Christians, just like non-believers and believers, there's going to be rough seas and there's going to be stout winds. There's going to be a storm. And you can expect troubles in this world. You can expect to face things that you never would imagine you would ever think you'd have to expect. And some people that may surprise you. Some people it may mess up your theology that you listen to. But Jesus himself also promised, not only in this story, but in John 16:33, it says, "In this world you will have tribulation." Fact of the matter is, Christ followers face the coronavirus. Christ followers have children who have illnesses. Christ followers battle addiction. Christ followers have depression. Christ followers have financial problems. Christ followers have marriage troubles. Christ followers have health issues. Christ followers will have troubles and trials just like everyone else. And it's not that become a Christian and you won't ever be fearful, because God would never put his children in any fearful situations. Not true. That's not the promise. To live fearless does not mean you have a life absence of storms. It's that you're committed to Christ, and following his will bring his presence in your storm. It's not that you get a free pass or you get a pass to everyone else, what everyone else has to go through. No. And you look back onto the story, the disciples get in the boat, the storm arises, and look what it says next. Finishing out verse 24. They come, calling out on Jesus, but he was asleep. Verse 25. Then his disciples came to him and woke him, saying, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." What? Jesus was asleep in the bottom of the boat? And that the troubled disciples run to him and they say, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." And literally, this was not in a statement form like we read in English. In the Greek, this is a question form. "Jesus, do you not even care? We are perishing." That's what it really says. It wasn't questioning his knowledge, it was questioning his attitude. "Jesus, do you not know? Do you not care? Do you not even care enough to wake up that we are perishing?" I find it interesting. In the midst of storms, most people do not question Jesus' power or his know-how or his experience with storms. The question they ask is, "God, Jesus, do you really care? Are you good?" They question his character. They're full of fear, which corrupts your faith in God. Listen, fear corrodes our faith in God's goodness. When we let fear sink in our hearts to push us to a point that we can't understand what God is doing in our lives, the temptation is to not buckle down and trust in God or trust in Jesus. The temptation is to question God's goodness in our life. "God, how can you sleep in my storms? How in the world can you permit this to happen? We're on your boat, Jesus. And you allowed this storm. Do you even care about us?" And what happens is, when we let fear rule our hearts, it unleashes a swarm of doubt, and we begin to get filled with bitterness and anger. And when fear grips us, it makes us mean and bitter. it makes us feel like we don't have control and that Jesus is not in control. And so we start questioning, is God really good? Does God really care? Is he listening to me? Does he even care, or has he forgotten about me? Has he put me on the shelf? We forget all the good things God has done for us, and we focus on the thing that we have at hand, and we say, God, do you even care? That's a typical reaction. But it's also a reaction that's filled with fear. And hearts, that's what happens. We don't recall how many times God delivers us up to that point. We don't recall how we know we were going to go through trials and temptations. We don't recall how fear has gripped our hearts, and how when we trust in God with faith, that we trust in the character of God and his faithfulness. No. Fear sucks the life out of us. It sucks the joy out of us. It sucks the peace out of us. And we become a bitter, backbiting person who sets their heart against God. That's what fear does. And so we know fear, when it leads to its ultimate conclusion, will bring you away from God because you want to blame God. Look what happens though in verse 25. His disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. Verse 26, but he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Look, Jesus looks at him squarely in the eyes and says, why are you fearful? And literally in the original Greek, it's a question. It's not a question, it's a command. It's actually opposite of what we learned, just found out by the other one. It's not a question, it's a command. Literally, he says, fear not. What he's saying is it's not right to be filled with fear. You got to stop. When I was a kid, me and my brother would get goofing around and cutting up. My dad would start off by saying, stop it. You know, and he would ignore us for a little while, and we'd fight a little more and do something aggravating my mom or something, if you could imagine that. and we would do this and that until we heard three words he'd always say. And we heard these three words, we knew it was serious. He'd stick his hand back in the car. It was back in the day, you know, where he'd get the hand back there, and that thing would go from one seat to the other, you know. He'd say, cut it out. When we heard cut it out, we knew it was time to cut it out. It was time to stop for real. And this is exactly what Jesus looks at these disciples and he says, cut it out. What are you doing? Are you serious? What are you doing? Why are you fearful? Cut it out. Stop. Fear not. He's saying, put an end to it right now. Listen, that's what we got to do. Your best defense against fear is to stop it in its tracks when it first happens. Let me tell you something about fear. Once it gets rolling, the further it goes, the harder it is to stop. And Jesus tells them right in the beginning, stop now. Do not do it. Put it, stop it in its tracks. Do not let that come into your minds. In fact, 21 times, Christ commands his disciples to fear not. The next closest command is to love God and love your neighbor, which only appears 8 times. Think about that. 21 times he says, fear not, take courage, be of good cheer, do not be afraid, stop it, cut it out, don't let fear rule your hearts. Because Jesus says, take seriously the one statement more than any other was, it says, do not be afraid. So, when we follow Jesus, doesn't mean we'll be free from fearful situations, but it does mean we have the opportunity and choice that we can have no fear. We can fear not. Fear may fill our world, but it doesn't have to fill our hearts. What are you afraid of this morning? What are you fearful of? Maybe you're in a marriage and you don't really know what's going to happen and you're full of fear. And let me tell you, that just corrodes it even more. You know what Jesus would say? Fear not. Stop it in its tracks. Don't go down that road of thinking. Maybe you're in a family or you have kids and you think, man, what in the world is going to happen to my son or my daughter? How is this going to work out? And you want to plan its life and you want everything to happen so great for them, but things aren't lining up right and you're full of fear because you're afraid. What's going to happen to them? Jesus would say, fear not. Maybe you're concerned about the coronavirus or any other virus that'll come along that you might die from, and you're so full of fear that you can't live your life now. Jesus would say, fear not. Stop it. Cut it out. Stop it in the beginning. Don't let it take hold and lose to the track. I love the rest of the story. It says he gets up, he arose, and he rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, who can this be that even the winds and the sea obey him? I love the first three words of that. Then he arose. Think about that. You know, to me, when I get home, a lot of times the boys will be in there, and they'll be clowning around and goofing around, and every once in a while they'll get Courtney, and they'll begin to torture her. They love to torture Courtney. And she is a willing candidate, by the way, because she loves it to bother and harass them, but then when they get back on her, she can't stand it when they finally get to a point where they really, you know, go overboard. And so I'm sitting there in my chair trying to watch live PD. And so I hear him back there clowning around. And Courtney would say, Dad, Dad, you know, Dad. And first four or five times I ignore it. But then I know when they go overboard and I start hear a squeal, like, you know, really serious squeal that she might be hurting. And when she screams, all of a sudden they hear my recliner go clink, clink, you know, slam. And I'm up and she knows I'm on my way. All right. She knows that that squeal finally got my attention to where I get up out of my chair and go in there and pull them both off of her and, you know, give Tucker, you know, he thinks he's tough now, though. So he thinks he could take me, but I'm pretty sure I told him I could whip him on the way to a fight. But anyhow, the one I'm not so much worried about him. The one I'm worried about is Tanner because he's getting pretty big now. All right? He's getting pretty strong, but he's got a really, really soft heart. So I still got the advantage with him. But anyhow, I'll get him up and whip him up real good, tell him to leave her alone, and then she'll come and says, I called, and I'm so glad you came, right? And listen, when we truly call upon the name of Jesus, he won't just sit back. I love this. It says, then he arose. And listen, you may have been calling on Jesus and calling on Jesus, what you think you're calling on Jesus, but listen, when we call on Jesus, he will arise. He will get up. And he heard their cries. And let me tell you, in the midst of your weaknesses and your storms, he hears you. He hears every cry. Matter of fact, in Revelation, it says that he saves every tear. Imagine every tear you've ever shed in heartbreak or heartache or pain, he says he keeps. And in one day, he's going to make it all right, he says. Every tear, every heartache, every pain, every storm, everything that you faced in your life, he hears. And then it says, he arose, he comes. He stood up and he rebuked the winds and the seas, and there was a great calm. Listen, so many times we look at the winds and the seas and we say, oh, wow, how in the world could God ever do this? And we begin to take our problems and we take them to God and say, look how big my problems are. Look how big they are, God. I can't do this, and I can't do that, and I can't do this. And we talk about what we can't do and how big our problem is. Now, we got to stop showing God how big our problem is, and we got to start showing our problems how big our God is. See, that's faith. Faith is saying, I know there may be an issue. I know the coronavirus might be real. I know I might have problems in my marriage or my family or with my health. But God, you're bigger than all that. And I trust in you and I'm having faith in you. And listen, this is not a get out of jail free card. This is not saying that Jesus will solve every one of your issues and troubles and trials. But he did hear. And he says he rebuked the winds, and he looked at them, and the men marveled, saying, who can this be? Who can this be that even the winds and the waves and all these things have to bow at the feet of this man's words? you really think about mature faith. Mature faith is trusting in God and leaving it up to Him for the consequences. It's that, hey, if God delivers, He is God. If God does not deliver, He's still God. Michael said he was going to count this. Here's one of your references, Michael. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, they were thrown in the fiery furnace, and all we ever hear about is how they were delivered. It's a great story. But what we don't hear is the true meaning behind what their mature faith was really all about. When they fired up that furnace, they looked at him, and he looked at the ruler, and he said, listen, we know our God is able, and He can deliver us. But he says, if he does not deliver us, He's still God, and He's still able. Listen, we don't get to command God, and we don't get to tell Him what to do. But we can trust in a heart of God and not have fear and be full of faith to know that God can and He will, and He hears our cries and our calls. And just like these disciples, we don't need to be filled with fear. We need to be filled with faith. Listen, if you didn't get anything else out of the sermon, write this down, put it in your memory. Something I heard from a preacher a long time ago, and I never forget. If Jesus is in your boat, it doesn't matter how big the storm is on the outside of your boat. If Jesus is in your boat, it doesn't matter how big the storm is outside of the boat. And the question is Jesus in your boat? Do you let Jesus rule in every part of your life? And the problem is not so much that He can, but the problem is, will we let Him? Like we want control, and so we try to control everything, and that's when we get fearful. If we allow Him to have control, and we allow Him in our boat, and we allow Him to be all have all that we have, then we have nothing to fear. And if He's in our boat, then we have nothing to fear. But if He's not in our boat, we have everything to fear. We have everything to fear. Listen, you want a marriage that's not full of fear? Make Jesus the center of it. You want a family that honors God, is not full of fear? Put Jesus in the middle of it. If you want a health or a life or perspective or a job or anything you have, put Christ in it. Put Him in the middle and put Him in your boat and say, God, You have it. I'm trusting in You. It's all in Your hands. The question is, have you given your heart to Jesus? It begins when we yield our salvation to Him. There's no greater thing you have to fear than your salvation. Trust me. So that we may inflict physical pain and we may have heartache and pain on this earth, but it pales in comparison to eternity. Listen, if you've never given your life to Jesus, you need to get Him in your boat. You need to say, Christ, I want You in my life. I yield my life to You. The second question is, what are you fearful of? If you were to take a piece of paper out and write down the biggest thing that causes you fear right now, right next to it, a question, is it bigger than God? Might be a bill. It might be a problem. It might be a health problem. Just ask the question, is it bigger than God? And fear not. It's not a question. It's a command. Fear not. And for us as Christians, that's the way we should live our life. Yes, we may face it. Yes, we will go through hard times. But we do not have to fear. I'll do something a little bit different this morning. Our president declared today a National Day of Prayer, which I think is awesome. And for us as Christians, we have the solution, right? We know who to talk to. We know we could call out on Jesus. We know we could call out on Him. So during the invitation, as we play the song, as we begin to sing, I'm going to ask you to get on your knees if you're able. And when we get on our knees, that's showing us that we're humble before God. If you can't get on your knees, I understand that. Maybe you get on your knees, but you can't get back up. We'll help you back up. But anyhow, I wish we could all come down to the front, but we don't have the room to do that. When we get a new building, we will, because we have a pretty big platform. We have a place for you to be able to kneel and come to the altar and pray. But I just, you know, the Bible says that if my people will humble themselves. And when we get on our knees, we're just showing a humbleness before God. Listen, like I said in what I said about the coronavirus, is it real? I don't know. It could be worse than what they say. But it could be not as bad as they say. I don't know. You can't trust the government, right? But we know we can trust in God. And as Christians, we don't need to call out on the government. We don't need to call out on anyone else. We could call out on God. And the president says, for us as people of God, he asks us to come together to pray for our country, to pray for those who are affected by it, to pray for the families, the service members, obviously the first responders, all those families that have to face those things in the hospitals. Listen, we need to call out on God in prayer and say, God, I just call out on your name, and we're just asking you, God, to hear our prayers, to help our people, help our nation, help our families and our homes, and then also to protect us. Listen, we would be foolish not to ask God to mercifully protect us, for God to give us his grace and his mercy in this time of need, and say, God, protect my family, protect my home, protect our church, protect my neighbors and the people, and just pray for one another. And so this morning, instead of asking you to stand or sit, I'm going to ask you to get on your knees, and I'm going to start us off in prayer, and we're going to about 2 or 3 minutes. I just want you to call on the name of the Lord to help with our country and this virus that we're dealing with. So let's pray together.